You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast on this Thursday, March 29th, 2018. I am John B. from GangreneNation.com. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe to it. You can do so on iTunes or Spotify. And if you enjoy this show, leave it a good review in iTunes. It's Mailbag Thursday, so we will answer your questions from the comments section of GangreneNation.com. Thank you to everybody who has submitted questions. And we'll start with this one. The offensive line. With all that's been done this offseason, I can't help but feel like the offensive line has been the weak link. On top of that, they have a new offensive coordinator and new run scheme. How would you address this position group at this point going forward? Well, I'm not sure there's a whole lot you can do to address the offensive line. I think that the time for that has come and gone. The Jets did make one addition. They did add Spencer Long, so they have a new center. They addressed the weakest part of their offensive line. But I'm not sure there's really much else they're going to be able to do. I think we all expect that they're going to draft a quarterback with their first-round pick. And now, because of the trade-up, they don't have a second-round pick. And once you get into the third round, you're not really talking about players who are going to contribute as rookies. Those are guys who are probably longer-term plays. Sometimes, every now and then, you'll have a third-round pick, a fourth-round pick who's ready to step in and play quality ball as a rookie. But that's not something you can expect. That's something that's just a pleasant surprise when it happens. And you'd be surprised if you go through the list how few third-round picks actually step right in and are good on day one. I think that the Jets are satisfied with where they're at on the offensive line. I'm not sure that's necessarily accurate. I'm not sure that I agree with them, but I think that they like what they have. And I think that there are a lot of different question marks at a number of different spots. I think Kelvin Beachum's a guy who's kind of middle of the pack. I think the two guards have a ton of question marks around them. Can Carpenter regain his level of play that where he was a pretty good guard 2015 and 16, not so good 2017? How does he fit in the new system? I think that's a question, and I don't think it's a guarantee he's going to bounce back. He's not, again, I've said this before, he's not like he's a guy who was great for 10 years and then had one bad year. This is a guy who's been up and down his whole career. Brian Winters essentially has three quarters of a season of quality play. The Jets are paying him a lot of money. And then Brandon Schell, who we've talked about, who it's still not clear what you can expect from him. So I'm not sure I agree with the Jets that everything's okay, but I think that they're going to go with what they've got. And I think what they're hoping is that the new scheme and new coaching fix whatever problems exist. Now, they took a big gamble last year, believing that they could coach guys like Wesley Johnson up, and it did not pan out. I think they're going in that similar direction this year, where they're hoping that their new coaching staff, their new system, will fix what's wrong. And I will say this, is that offensive line does seem to be one of those positions where coaching can make a difference. If you bring in a really good coach, he can turn careers around. You've seen that recently in New England when they brought back their legendary coach Dante Scarnecchia to run the offensive line, and guys like Marcus Cannon, who were really struggling, turned into really good players. So it can happen. I'm not sure that that's what I would expect for the Jets, but I think that's what they're thinking about. Next question. Why no quarterback coach, especially with rookie number three, the likely pick at quarterback? Well, the Jets actually have a quarterback's coach. It's Jeremy Bates, who is also the offensive coordinator. He's going to be pulling double duty. And it's not exactly something that's out of the ordinary. I think you see in many cases the offensive coordinator is also the quarterback's coach. So can you be concerned that he might be spread too thin? I don't think it's a crazy concern, but it's also not something that's totally out of the ordinary. I think the Jets believe in Bates. The Jets like Bates. I think he's a good coach, and they think he's the best guy for the job. And I'll say this is you also have kind of a $10 million assistant quarterbacks coach in Josh McCown, who I think is a guy who could be a very good coach in this league. I think he's a guy who when he's done playing, he'll transition and he'll do a pretty good job. I really think very highly of McCown's mind as a when it comes to helping young when it comes to helping guys. Now, I know the response to that is, well, what good young quarterback has he ever mentored? And that's a fair question, and it's a question that makes you wonder whether he's worth $10 million. But I think he's a good guy to have around. I think he's been exposed to a lot of different offensive systems. He's a guy who's patient with young players, so I think he'll probably help a bit. But back to the original point is Bates is the quarterback's coach, and we can question Bates, but it's not a totally radical setup that the Jets have here. There are lots of teams that do this. Next question. We all assume the Jets will draft a quarterback in the first round this year. Let's also assume the team heads to training camp with the offense pretty much as it currently exists, plus whatever quarterback they do draft. Do the Jets have enough offensive talent surrounding any rookie quarterback to give the rookie a good chance of success? That's a great question. And I would be lying if I said that was not a concern that I have for the Jets. I think you look at this offense and there are lots of question marks all over. I think, and the other thing is I don't see game-breaking talent on the offense. I don't see anywhere that a young quarterback could lean. Now, I think that this is a better setup than, say, the Jets gave Geno Smith or, say, what the Jets gave Mark Sanchez back in 2012. I mean, those were just unfathomably bad circumstances. So I don't think the circumstances are quite that bad. I think you have players you could talk yourself into at every position, but I'm not sure you have a go-to guy at wide receiver. Now, I think you have professional, credible receivers, and you have guys who have business starting in the NFL. Again, unlike Geno Smith, where you had guys who had no business being in the NFL, you have some receivers who have a business starting in the NFL. And on the offensive line, as I said, you have concerns, but there also is a plausible path to the offensive line being pretty decent. And part of it, of course, does involve these guys being coached up, these guys adapting well to the new system. And at running back, you've got a decent stable of backs. Crowell is a guy who's produced in the league before. Bilal Powell, pound for pound, carry for carry, has been one of the better backs in the NFL over the last few years, and Elijah McGuire flashed a little bit last year. So you have functional pieces, but what I always like to have is I always like to have something you can lean on, something the young quarterback can lean on, you know, whether that's a big go-to receiver, you know, a guy he could just throw the ball up to when in doubt, or a tight end as a safety blanket, which the Jets don't have, or just an offensive line that will be a fortress protecting him, or a run game that you can force defenses to adjust to where they have to start bringing extra guys into the box and simplifying their coverages. I always like to have that around a rookie quarterback. I'm not going to lie. It concerns me that the Jets don't have that. It's not a dire situation. It's not a dire situation like you had with Geno Smith, but I'm concerned about the lack of game-changing talents on this offense. Next question. Last year, Maccagnan traded back in the middle of the draft to many people's chagrin. This year, however, we have given up a fair amount of draft capital to move up to 3. Does it make more sense to make a mid-round trade back this year to get more swings at the plate? Unless, of course, there's a home run pick sitting there at our third rounder. You know, people are going to hate this because people hate how the Jets did this last year, but yeah, I think it's a good idea. I think once you reach a certain part of the draft, you have to play the odds, and the odds are not in your favor, so you have to try and accumulate as many picks as you can. It becomes more about as much about quantity as it is about quality in a certain point of the draft, and I think that's around the third or fourth round. Now, the counter to that is people will say, well, there aren't as many good players, so if you see a guy there, you have to make a move to get him. But usually there's a reason a guy has fallen to the third round, the fourth round, the fifth round. It's because there are deep flaws, and it's because it's difficult to project the player. And if you look at the teams that are really successful in the draft, they tend to be the teams that have the most picks because the draft, especially when you get later on, is a very inexact science. You know, the league is pretty good at finding the guys who are great, and those guys go in the first round. Those are the guys without the flaws. The league's not so good at figuring out which players who have flaws are going to develop over time, and those tend to be the late-round picks. The league's not so good at those. So I think in general, you should play the odds. You should trade down. It's always, I think if you trade down more than you trade up, you'll be in pretty good shape. You should always be looking to accumulate extra picks just because the draft is so inexact and people don't like it because there's always a guy somebody likes at that pick. And when the Jets don't get him, they get angry. And if that guy turns into a good player, oh boy. But I think that in general, you should be looking to add extra picks because teams lose more than they trade up, more trading up than when they trade down. And that's especially true in the later portion of the draft where it's just such an inexact science. Next question. New York has a cap space of $168,368,224, of which 89% has to be used. $149,847,719. Right now, we are at $144,437,163 with cap space $34,971,060. Congrats, and thank you for being so exact with those measurements. I have respect for that. If we sign no other free agents of dollars worth, and after signing our draft class, we could be left with a substantial amount of cap space left over. How would that translate dollar for dollar? Would we only be able to allowed to carry over the 11% of the total cap as a cutoff, or could we carry over all of the remaining cap space without penalty? Okay, so this question ultimately comes down to the cap floor, because the NFL has a salary cap floor, and it mandates that teams spend 89% of the salary cap. Teams are also allowed to carry over unused cap space from year to year. So I think the question is that if the Jets don't spend to the salary cap floor, are they allowed to carry over all that space or just the space that's above the floor? So you have to spend 89% of the cap. Can the Jets carry over all their cap space, even if some of that cap space comes below the 89% of the cap? And it's a good question. The cap floor is one of the most misunderstood things, is that it's not actually a hard mandate the way the salary cap is. You're not allowed to spend over the salary cap. You are allowed to spend under the floor, though. The floor comprises a four-year period, so you're supposed to spend at least 89% of the cap over a four-year period. And the other aspect of this, which makes it even more complicated, is that it actually deals with real dollars spent. So you have to spend 89% of the dollars of the salary cap over a four-year period, whereas a player's cap number, you may be paying him $1 million in a year, and he has a cap number of $4 million, so that's another aspect of it. It gets highly complex. But the bottom line is that you have to spend the 89% of the cap over a four-year period. So if you go under it for 1 year, that's not a problem. And even at the end of the four-year period, it's not a huge penalty. You just have to pay your players whatever the difference is between what you didn't spend and the 89% if you fall under the floor. So if you don't spend to the cap, you just pay the other guys more money. You pay the guys who are on your team more money. So it's not a hard mandate. So you're allowed to carry over whatever cap space you don't spend. So if you have $50 million of cap space, it doesn't matter that you're under the floor. You get to carry over $50 million. It's a full dollar for dollar thing. There's no penalty. You know, you're 30 million under the cap, you carry over 30 million, even if that's under the cap floor. So that's not an issue. The Jets will be able to carry over a substantial amount of money if that's how they choose to play it. Next question. Does Rosen start game one? And I'm assuming that this question is presuming Josh Rosen is the Jets' pick at number three. I think it's a tricky path for any quarterback the Jets draft. I think it's possible, but if you're asking me, do I think it's going to happen? I'd probably bet on no, just because you have two veteran quarterbacks here, one of whom was the starter last year, who the Jets seem to like. The second of which is a guy the Jets brought in who has some upside. So I think that the odds are against any rookie starting week one. I don't think it's impossible, but I think it's less than 50-50. If you want a definitive answer, if you want me to go out on a limb, I'm saying no. Because he doesn't just have to beat one guy, he's going to have to beat two guys. Next question. Is there any possibility that Maccagnan drafts a non-quarterback at three or trades down if overwhelmed by an offer? Well, you never say never, but I think the odds are very, very much against it. I would be floored, and I think it would be very difficult to justify such a move. I mean, this team needs a quarterback, and you know, I don't know that you could really justify trading out of that pick I mean, you talk about being overwhelmed by an offer, but the Colts put this pick up for bid. You know, the Colts, you have to imagine the Colts just held an auction for this pick. So if a team wasn't willing to give, to do what it took to move up to three when the Colts had the pick, why would they do it when the Jets have the pick? So I think that it's difficult to come up with a scenario where that would make sense. Every team probably already made their best offer, and the Jets made the best of all the offers. And the other thing I would say is, how good is the non-quarterback you're going to draft? Because, I mean, you gave up a three second-round picks is not a ton for a franchise quarterback, but for a player at another position, that's a lot. And it comes down to the impact the quarterback has, where the quarterback has such an outsized impact on the game that 3 second round picks is a bargain for a quarterback. But it may not be a bargain for a guy who's just a good player at another position. You know, a good Saquon Barkley, just a good running back when you're in a draft with lots of good running backs, when even with a third round pick, you're going to be able to get a good running back. That's a steep price to pay. So the price has to do with the reward. You know, the price the Jets paid has to do with what you get in return. The quarterback's not a huge price. A player in another position is. So I think that it would be very surprising to see the Jets move out of the pick, because nobody made a better offer than the Jets a couple weeks ago. So why would they make a better offer now? And again, value is just the quarterback so much more valuable than any other position that it becomes much more difficult to justify the trade up if that's the direction you're heading. And that's part of the reason I reserve the right to change my mind about the trade, because I reserve the right, and I'm kind of holding my final opinion on the trade until I see what the Jets actually do with the pick, because it was a move that, it was a means to an end. It wasn't the actual end. The trade up was to get presumably to get a quarterback. We have to see what the Jets actually do with the pick before we can say whether the trade was the right idea or the wrong idea. Knowing what I know now, I think it's the right idea, but the Jets may surprise me with this, and then that would lead me to have a different view on this. Next question. Do you think there's a good chance the Giants draft a non-quarterback? And that'll be our last question. And I've been saying this for months. I think the Giants are out of their mind if they don't take a quarterback. I mean, I don't see how they think they can build around Eli Manning. I think that they're taking the wrong track, to be honest with you. It seems like they believe that they're ready to compete with Eli Manning. I think that they should have let Eli go. I think they should have brought a new guy in. I think that the Giants, and this is me reading the tea leaves, I don't have any insider information on when it comes to the Giants, but it almost feels to me like they got a little spooked by what happened with Eli Manning during the regular season, the backlash they faced when they replaced him for that game. And I think it seems to me like they almost took the wrong lesson from it. Is, you know, it's not an insult to Eli Manning to let him go somewhere else and try and win a Super Bowl and say, turning the page, we're going in a different direction. You know, we're bringing in a new guy to build around. That's not an insult. What's an insult is benching him and saying Geno Smith's our starter. That's an insult to Eli Manning. So I think the Giants kind of got spooked by that and are maybe taking the wrong path. Now maybe they're afraid to replace Eli, even though it makes a lot of sense for them. And I'm not even sure if I'm drafting a quarterback, I probably just would have let Eli go. I mean, I think you're setting up a bad potential environment there where the focus is not building around the young quarterback. The focus is still trying to win with Eli, and then you create a whole storyline about, you know, when's the replacement stepping in? When's the young guy replacing? When's the young guy stepping in for Eli? You know, I think that could be counterproductive, and I think you just want to bring in a guy and be able to build the team around him, not have to deal with replacing Eli, just get it over with. And it would be one thing if I felt like the Giants could win with Eli, but I don't think they can anymore. So to answer your question, I mean, it almost feels like this is a possibility, because it seems like the Giants do believe they can still win with Eli Manning. I think the Giants are crazy if they don't, but I actually think the odds are better than a lot of people do. Now, I don't think you can rule out the Giants trading down, because they may be able to stockpile some picks if they want to build around Eli. But I don't think it's a total lock the Giants are picking a quarterback at two, the way a lot of people seem to feel. I think that there's a real chance that they're going to take a pass rusher or an offensive lineman. I think that the Giants actually believe that they're closer than they really are, and maybe I'm wrong. I wouldn't be shocked to see them take a quarterback at two, but you look around what people are saying, you know, media types, fans, a lot of people seem to think it's a foregone conclusion the Giants are taking a quarterback. And again, I mean, I don't have any sort of insider information about the Giants, but just reading what's happening there, I don't think you can rule out them taking a non-quarterback at two. I mean, I think they should. I think they should take a quarterback at two. And if they don't take a quarterback, I definitely think they should trade down because I think there's going to be a good deal for them. But I don't know. I'm not convinced. And again, would I be surprised if they take a quarterback? No. But would I be surprised if they don't? No, I wouldn't. Well, thanks for tuning in today, and thanks for your questions. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoy the show, subscribe, iTunes, Spotify. Leave the show a good review in iTunes. Have a great Thursday. We will be back on Friday.